America Trends Podcast is part of the MHNR Network. MHNRnetwork.com.
What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in, and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
Welcome back to America Trends. I'm Larry Rifkin. For a country that values the almighty dollar as much as we do, it's remarkable to me that we have such financial illiteracy. But when you think about it, it's not taught in schools. It should be one of those things we're teaching from elementary school through college, because money is the one thing you're going to have to handle throughout your entire life. And let's be honest, you and I have seen friends and relatives really not handle it terribly well. Well, do you understand the difference between a mid-cap or a large-cap fund? The impact of interest rates on your savings and borrowing? Do you have a plan or a planner or even a budget? We're going to help you redefine and reclaim financial literacy today on America Trends.
With me on America Trends is Cindy Kuyumjian, and she is a woman who knows a whole lot about personal finance and actually can tell us a lot about our practices as Americans today, whether we're saving enough, if we're doing it in the right fashion. And she can also talk about something that I think is so lacking, and we'll talk about that as well, and that is financial literacy, which is so perfect, Cindy, because your book is called Redefining Financial Literacy. So let's just talk about that at the start. Seems to me that is a country that is so consumed with matters of wealth and money. Everyone is either longing for it or striving for it or resentful of it. We seem to lack a lot of the basics when it comes to understanding it.
That's absolutely true. By the way, thank you so much for having me on your show today. When you have only 6 states in the country that require a half a year of financial literacy as you go through grade school and high school, it really creates a big problem, in my opinion, because, you know, we learn about history, math, English. Would it be nice to have a class on financial literacy as you're going through middle school and high school and even entering into college? We spend so much money on our education, but how much money and time and effort is really spent on learning about what to do with the money we'll make someday?
Well, not only that, think about it, Cindy. I mean, even as a young person, get an allowance, or we set up various buckets for our children, short-term savings, long-term, trying to get them into good habits. So money is something that is really a part of our lives throughout. And are there any other matters that an educational system could address that have such universal application?
You know, you actually brought up a big point. You know, the United States rank 18% in the world in financial literacy. That's shocking, isn't it? I mean, we've been in the dark, and I don't know if that was a motivation by different entities, but I know the financial service industry, which of course I'm in, there's only a small percentage of their profits that they really invest on educating the public. So I just think it's become a problem because of our educational system. The financial service industry has not done a good job educating. And I think it comes down to the digital age, right? I mean, everyone has access to information today. Information is knowledge, but it gives people, they feel that the digital age gives people empowerment because they have access to it today. But the problem is they don't know how to interpret that information and how it relates to their goals and objectives.
But I think it predates that, Cindy. I'm going to be really honest with you, because I remember when I was growing up, my dad died very young, and he died without a lot of money. And I always took that to heart. And it wasn't his fault. He had a great position, but it wasn't paying that well. And then he didn't have insurance for the medical issues that he was addressing. And, you know, so you look at it and you say to yourself, I think this has been going on for an awfully long time. And my question is, because in your book, Redefining Financial Literacy, you really want us to learn a whole lot more about money. You are much more sophisticated than some of the models that I have been taught over the years. And you talk about the 60-40 model a lot.
Yes.
But when somebody, for example, one in three households reported difficulty making ends meet, before the onset of the health and economic crisis, you know, there's that old expression about $400 an unexpected bill. You couldn't replace all the tires on your car. I mean, but this goes back a long way. And the only thing that I could find at the time when I was younger was Andrew Tobias's The Only Investment Guide You'll Ever Need. And I read that really with deep interest, and I made certain that my children, when they grew up, read that. But I'll tell you, to really advance a lot of the things that you put in your book, people have to be a lot more knowledgeable than they are today, or even have more income than they have today, or at least that they're saving toward investment.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's, you know, it comes to, down to macroeconomics, things you and I can't control in the economy. Because micro forces is really things we can control, how much we save, how much we accumulate in debt, and setting up a basic savings and investment program. The problem here is the problems that Americans and the social issues that are going on today are related to economic and political issues in this country, which tend to be hidden from most investors. 34% of adults today can't even pay their basic expenses. And I think that's correlated to failed wages in America, not keeping up with inflation, but still related to, and I'm going to be writing a second book is finished up called Feminine and Courage, but I am going to be writing a deep dive on political and economic forces that have created instability in this country in retirement, our social security system, our pension options, and of course the 60-40 model.
Well, you do point out that we have been left on our own. If there was ever a time in our history where companies have backed away from pensions, very few people have them except in the public sector, and even those are underfunded, as you pointed out. I mean, people really have to know a whole lot more than they ever had in the past. I mean, even the options that are available to you under the Affordable Care Act creates lots of issues. Or when do you take Social Security, and what are the right decisions about your investment strategies? There are so many things that really don't have a cookie-cutter approach, because it really depends on how you're looking at these issues and what resources you have to apply toward them.
Yeah, I mean, investors need to change their mindset. I think it's a mindset. Investors, you know, you turn on the TV, you know, you hear about the stock market, and, you know, you want to get involved. The problem is stocks and bonds together, in my professional opinion, based on all my research, I believe people need to add other asset classes to sort of combat the lackluster returns we've had in stocks and bonds in the last 20 years. And that is going to take education, that's going to take time, and you need to find an advisor who is well-versed, not only in micro, to be able to guide you how much to save, how much debt you should accumulate, but also macroeconomics is a big piece that's missing, and that's where people are hidden in the dark, and how it affects their money, and why their wage, why they haven't had increases in wages, why their investments, why is the stock market so volatile? Why did we see a drop 40% in 2020? I mean, investors are scared. They don't know who to turn to. So it comes down to, you know, getting educated, taking the time, hiring an advisor. You know, 70% of investors last year by CNBC reject financial advice. I mean, they're scared. They don't trust the system. And that's a big problem.
Well, I know there were these fiduciary rules under the Obama administration that were put forward. Mm-hmm. And then I believe they were rescinded under the Trump administration. I mean, I think a lot of people look at it, Cindy, and say, is this person out for my interests or their own interests? Are they selling a commissionable product? Are they selling a product that has a load piece up front such that I'm losing money before I start and I may not gain that back? Because there's no financial advisor that I know of who will guarantee you a certain return. They can't.
Yeah, so the DOL rules, it's really based on three pillars. Number one, is the advisor educated? And this is where I say education today is a two-pronged approach. It's macro and micro. Number two, are they building a dynamic, diversified model for you to smooth out volatility and increase your income in a world where yields are almost below 1%? And do they have your best interest in mind? The problem is I believe the regulators are trying to regulate something like they did the pensions with the 1974 ERISA Act. But we're not giving the tools to the advisors, and the advisors are just more or less sticking with this, you know, the 60-40 that did 8% in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. In the last 20 years, it hasn't performed. And if they're not innovating their practice, their educational base, you know, framework, then unfortunately, you have to ask yourself, are they giving you the best options and are they in your best interest? Because it does come down to fees, but it also comes down to a lot of other factors. How are you meeting the client's needs in today's geopolitical environment? And, you know, so I call it the three-prong approach, macro, micro, and portfolio construction. Your advisor has to be equipped with more knowledge than they have in the past because things are changing rapidly as we live through the digital age, and we must adjust. It's sort of like that. I always talk about it like this. You have the flip phone. My father still has one, and I'm trying to get him to buy an iPhone, right? Dad, he goes, but Cindy, it works. I said, yeah, but you can get a better outcome if you go to the iPhone. So it's changing investors' mindset. I'm not saying the 60-40 is always going to be broken.
Oh, by the way, Cindy, we should back up because even as much as you and I know what that shorthand means, there's got to be somebody listening to our podcast, hello out there, and they have no idea even what that is. I mean, we've really got to back up. And I say that because we are a paycheck to paycheck economy. There are people out there who are saying to themselves, I wish I could make the mistake of putting 60% into stocks and 40% into bonds, but my money is all going into my oil tank or my gas tank of my car. I don't have any disposable income.
Okay, so with that point, this is what I say. We all go out to eat. I mean, let's break it down. We must, you know, get engaged with our monthly expenses. I mean, if we had $300 a month that we were going out to eat, but can we cut that to $150? We got to really break that down. And, you know, when I use the word budget, a lot of people are like, oh, God, that's a bad word. But we really need to get engaged with our spending and our savings. Because when you live in this technology world and you can push a button on your phone and buy something, it definitely makes it more tempting. So I think it comes down to budgeting. But like you said, do we have money left over? It's a challenge. It's been a big problem for, I think, 30% of investors can't even pay their basic expenses. So, you know, it comes down to wages and inflation. And, you know, we need to bring in political leaders that understand the social problems in America. I don't mean to go on politics here for a second, but I think it comes down to those issues. And when you have the Federal Reserve continuing to stimulate by buying bonds and lowering rates, you know, you get into a position that sometimes the value of our dollar is dropping because we're devalued, you know, because we're, you know, they're buying bonds, and in my opinion, they're adding more money to the money supply and devaluing the dollar over time. So, you know, investors.
Some of these factors that are at play right now.
Yeah.
But I think the whole idea that this is now much more do it yourself, and the more that you have to do yourself, because there are so many more things that are today to me, essentials. You mentioned one of them, your smartphone or your streaming bill or things that connect you to the rest of the world that we never had as expenses previously. But then in your book, you give us some shocking, really, statistics. 60% of us have no budget. 50% have money for an emergency. That means 50% do not. 30% minimum payments on credit cards. So, I mean, that's a lot. I mean, given those exorbitant rates, 84% have never been in a financial literacy program. And so I guess my question is, how do you start? For somebody who's scratching their head and saying, well, I just took on a new job and I'm going to have an extra $75 a week, and I'm 30 years old. And by the way, the millennials to me have been really given a short end of the stick.
Absolutely. I agree with you, Larry, on that.
In so many ways. So where do I begin thinking about a program before I get into what to me, from your standpoint and what you're putting forward, I think is great, but it's pretty sophisticated.
Breaking that down has been, you know, complex. I rewrote the book four times to try to give as much information as I can. But when you break it down, you know, the millennials, in my opinion, you know, they're being crippled with their student debt they have. So I'm going to highly recommend that if you're employed in a company that offers you a 401k, you know, try to get started with a small percentage of your income. Because to be honest with you, I was in their shoes. We were in their shoes 30 years ago, 35 years ago. And how I did it, you know, I'm from Detroit and I moved to California with a couple thousand dollars. And I remember the first thing I did, Larry, I remember saving $50 a month. It starts small, but it gets bigger and bigger and bigger over time as you increase your income and you advance in whatever avocation that you're in. It starts small, but it can create into something big. And I think people lose that touch. That compound interest over a long period of time can really have a big effect on the accumulation of your wealth. But you must start with something. I remember I had credit card debt. I just moved out here. Pay yourself first.
Yeah, that's so, I know you put that right on the top of your list when you say change your mindset through actionable habits. Spend monthly, track your spending, reduce debt, start investing. And I think those are all incredibly important. But people really oftentimes, they get themselves tied up in a ball because they really want to, they see in our society images of wealth. It's everywhere. And I notice this, and Cindy, I'd be curious as to whether you notice this because you are advising people. But on television, you look at the homes that are represented on commercials, and you say, wow, this is large, spacious, gorgeous. It looks like it's just out of Home and Gardens magazine. And that's not where most of us live.
That's true. I mean, you know, look at the way people look on TV, the homes. I mean, everybody wants to strive to achieve that, but advertising is sort of fooling the consumer. I mean, how many ads a day are we being marketed to? I mean, it sort of takes us off balance in achieving our financial goals and objectives with the temptations and the realities of all wanting to get rich quick. And it's not a quick process. That's the thing. It takes time, you know, and a lot of reasons why women aren't as financially literate as men is because they don't have the time. They're raising kids, they're working. I mean, it comes down to time. Allocating the time it takes. And, you know, again, I think a lot of people have moved away from reading. I mean, maybe with COVID recently, reading's become more popular. But people are skimmers today. You know, they like to, they want a quick response. They want a quick solution. They, you know, it takes time and it takes effort. And I remember when I was saving my $50 a month, every year I do a little net worth statement. You know why? Because it was psychologically motivating. Okay, the first year I was worth $2,000. Next year I was worth $5,000. You know, and as I increased it, that was something to reach for. So if you don't set a goal, you're not going to attain it. You're just not. Oh, I'll do it later. Oh, God, now I look back at my life. If I could have even saved more money, how great that would have been. because I didn't have a mentor. I was just new in business at the age of 23. I had some student loans I had to pay off. And so I thought to myself, well, if I'm going to be a financial planner, I better set the example. And the example is really simple. It was just saying, I'm not going to spend all my money every month, and I'm going to pay myself a little bit each month. I'm going to track it, and I'm going to grow it. And that's how you start in a time that I had no money. There was no hope. You know, I'm out of college. I got bills. But I made time. I made the effort to put that money aside. I don't care if it's $1, $5, $25. You got to start somewhere. And then over time, it just becomes a habit, an actionable habit.
Exactly. Cindy Kuyumjian is with us, and she is a certified financial planner. The book is called Redefining Financial Literacy, Unlocking the Hidden Forces of Your Financial Future. And if someone is listening and says, well, I really understand all these fundamentals, all these tenets, and I've been hearing them for many years, live under your means, pay yourself first. And so they're starting on a group of actionable habits that are healthy and will lead to something really important down the road. However, they don't know how to plan for different milestones of life. If you're about to get married, and a lot of kids are getting married later, so they're paying for their own weddings. Then, of course, they might go on for more schooling, or they might have children, and they want those children perhaps to go to private school. At the same time, they know, looking ahead, what college means down the road. And then, yes, Cindy, over the rainbow is retirement. So they're really confused. Where do I start?
You know, first of all, if you can afford or you can seek out a financial professional, because I remember in the early days of my planning when I met clients, we would sort of put a little bit in short, medium, and long term. So it's first identifying an emergency fund. When COVID happened, Larry, you mentioned earlier, almost 50% of Americans didn't have $400 to pay their emergency needs.
Before?
So you got to break it before COVID, right? So you really need to start and build a short-term fund, because that would be for, you know, a rainy day or something like this comes up that's unexpected. So I think you start with, hey, do you have an emergency fund set up? Well, what's an emergency fund? Well, if your expenses are $2,000 a month, you start with 3 months, which would be $6,000. So if I meet somebody and they've already established their emergency fund, now we're talking about, you know, medium-term needs. You have kids. Do we need to save for a home? Okay, you break it down that way. And then we determine how much they need for a down payment, and we plan accordingly. Now, if they have a plan at work and they're in their 20s, 30s, or 40s, they might still have 25 years to retirement. So as a rule of thumb, if you really can't afford much and your company's giving you a match up to 3%, I say, listen, you got to do 3, because if they're giving you 3, you got 6. Average Americans save 6 to 7% of their income. So that's a good start. So, you know, long-term is critical for young people because compound interest works in your favor. And getting started up to your match in your 401k, at least you're getting some kind of match, and it's helping your saving capacity until you can afford more. But starting with that emergency fund and then doing your midlife goal planning, I call it short-term planning, medium-term planning, and long-term planning.
So people should not get overwhelmed with it. Having said that, you do suggest, and I'll get to this now, about the 60-40 rule. A lot of people will read in Money Magazine or Kiplinger or whatever it may be, and that's been the tradition, 60% stocks, 40% bonds, and you keep calibrating that as you get older, and then you flip it, and ultimately maybe you're at 40, 60, or 30, 70, whatever it may be. You then, in your book, very interestingly, get into the history of what you call alternative investments. Now, again, I don't want people getting into things that are a little bit arcane or risky, but you point out that there are other asset classes that are often left by the wayside or not even in the lexicon of somebody who may be advising you. And I want to get back to the whole issue of financial advisors in a moment. So tell us a little bit about alternative investments.
You know, alternative investments started to become popular for Main Street investors in probably about 2003. And that was a pivotal point in my career. I was ready to leave the industry. I was 41 years old. I saw my seniors lose 20% in the tech wreck. And I thought to myself, if another one of these happens, my clients are going to run out of money. And ultimately, the 2008 credit crisis hit. So I left the big insurance company, financial firms, and I went independent because I had an option. And 50% of advisors today work for an independent firm, meaning a firm like Merrill Lynch is going to give you, you know, certain product lines that you can sell. But being an independent, you're objective. So, you know, the independent firms were offering alternative investments. And think of alternative. It's not a stock or a bond. Now, you have a lot of different alternatives, okay, you can choose from. So as you know in the book, I broke down only two that were easy to understand, two that, you know, I thought could be suitable for investors, okay, that are retail, Main Street investors, and two that can help with some of the problems concerning yield. Because people are in retirement right now. Think about this, Larry. The banks aren't paying much, right? Mm-hmm. And the bond market's paying a point or two, a couple points. I mean, remember the days when interest rates were, the 10-year treasury was 7%? I mean, those were the good old days. So when the good old days, when yields were much higher, the 60-40 was definitely more appealing. But as we see, we have lived in a low interest rate environment and we have seen rates drop. And the reason I say that is I bought my first house in Orange County when I was in 2000, my son was born, and my 9% rate has gone down to 3. So we know rates have gone down. When interest rates go down, all of a sudden that 40% of the equation is no longer effective. And so people are like, okay, 40% in bonds, what am I going to go do, jump in the stock market? No, you can't jump in the stock market if you're 65 years old with all your money and you're trying to attain an income. That's risky. Mm-hmm. So what other asset classes can you use? You can use real estate, and you can use private credit, which is senior secured. And those in alternatives could, and the research is this. In the long period of time when alternatives have been around, the institutions have been using alternatives, and guess what they've been getting? The research says it smooths out risk. It reduces risk, actually, the research says. Alternatives can potentially reduce risk and give you a better outcome. Oh, my God, why isn't anyone talking about that? Because advisors need to be educated. Institutions have been using alternatives since 1985. How long ago is that? That's like, 30-some years ago? And they've been getting better outcomes in some years, but over a long period of time, the research is it can smooth out volatility, it could potentially get you a higher return, and you could potentially get lower risk. So why not look into that? Why isn't anyone talking about that now that interest rates are so low? Back in 2003, I was definitely one of the first advisors, in my opinion, at my firm doing and using these alternatives, and they've worked beautifully. They work even better in some instances because interest rates are so low. So the institutions, the large companies, and the wealthy Americans have had access to these asset classes. Why Main Street Americans, everyday investors, have only had access to this asset class since 2003. And it comes down to one thing, Larry, education.
And it's that's interesting why I wrote that just book. Today, as we're speaking, IPOs now are going to be opened up to individual investors, which had previously been available only to many institutional companies. And then I know that Robinhood, the group that's been in the news a lot in the recent period, they too are trying to figure out ways to help the individual investor get into IPOs. So there are going to be people who hear that and say, well, then I can get in on the ground floor of the next big thing. But the problem is we don't know what the next big thing is. Mm-hmm. So how do you encourage people not to chase the rainbow, if you will, and be steady, be diversified? And you as a financial planner and advisor, what do you say to people and what should people want to hear from people like you when they come in? How much of it is you giving out advice one way or they giving you information that you then have to process to give them the best plan?
Yeah, so I think it goes two ways. But the problem is the industry has been one way. I mean, the client would come in and explain what they needed, and the advisor would give recommendations. I think together, I think it's an educational process, first of all. And that piece of it is always missing, because you walk in like, oh, they know what they're doing. They're just going to tell me what to do with my money. And you're going to go along with it because they have the credentials. But what I have found many instances, talking and listening to the client is critical, because that is sort of the brainstorm meeting that you need to have. And that doesn't happen in an hour. We spend hours and hours trying to get to know our clients to make sure their expectations, which is really important, their expectations and perceptions are being met. So somebody walk in my office and say, I want 10%. Well, the stock market in the last 20 years hasn't done that. So we need to educate them and explain, hey, listen, this is what the – and this is really critical. A lot of advisors say, well, the last 10 years, the market's been up significantly, and it's going to do that the next 10 years. Not necessarily. Look at the last 20 years, look at today, and look at the forecast in the next 10 years. Then use that as your framework, because I'm always looking at what the experts are saying 10 years from now. You can't just look in the rearview mirror. You'll end up crashing, right? So you got to look. Investing is long-term. You got to look at a 20-year return. You got to look at what's going on economically today, and you got to look at what's happening in the next 10 years. And remember, it's trying to get the best possible outcome, because as a planner, I can't guarantee you anything. You said that earlier in your podcast, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we want to get the best probability of success. The best probability of success is knowing what's going on with clients, what they want to accomplish, and making sure that the client's expectations are realistic. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. But if I came to you today and I was one of half of the Americans who say that their number one financial priority is staying mm-hmm. current on bills, now that is up in 2020, 2021 from 38% the prior year. So you have half of Americans saying, that's all that I really am looking at today as to my financial future is the bill that is coming in this month. How
yes.
frightening is that? Getting back to your book's title, Redefining Financial Literacy.
It's really up to that person who can't barely make their expenses, right? Is they have to evaluate a couple things in their life. They have to look at their expenses. Can I find a way to downsize, right? I mean, mm-hmm. when 2008 happened, I know I went through my entire budget and cut our expenses by 30%. Okay, I didn't need to, but we had a period of time, you know. So investors need to be accountable to their decision-making, right? Am I living above or below my means? Can I reduce my expenses, right? Because that's what it comes down to. Or can I get a better job? Or can I get a second job? I remember I came to California. I was working two jobs to make my ends meet. Then I got back to one job, you know, my occupation. But I did whatever it took to get that extra $50 or $100. If it's a second job, if it's downsizing, or if it's managing my monthly expenses, that accountability needs to be met by the investor based on goal setting, motivation, and accomplishing a goal for a future date. Okay, you understand that? There's three, because planners can't really help. I mean, if you don't have any money to invest, there's not a lot I can help you with, but I can give you a strategy, because I was in your shoes 35 years ago, and I know what it took for me to save that $50 a month. It was that second job. It was reducing my expenses and sharing a room with my roommate. I remember paying in Southern California $300 for rent, but I had to share a room with somebody so I could free up extra money. So that's what people need to do. They need to really see what their expenses are, see if they can reduce them, see if they can get a second job, or maybe they go back to school part-time to get a better job, right? Because that's what you need to do when it comes to trying to find that extra $50 or $100 for that third of the population that can't meet their expenses each month.
I haven't really dwelled on it very much in this conversation, but I'd like you to briefly address the issue of retirement, because so many mm-hmm. people who talk on radio and podcasts talk about retirement almost exclusively. And, of course, people are living longer, so you have to factor that in. people yep. are often retiring without enough money, and they are thinking that Social Security is going to take them a long way down the road. We know for most people, unless they were high mm-hmm. earners, that's not the case. So what do you say to someone about retirement today?
Well, that's a very big problem, and I am going to write my third book, How to Build a Sustainable Retirement in a Broken System. Okay, you know, the pension plans you mentioned earlier in your podcast, you know, less companies. I think 3% of Americans have pensions today. Okay, Social Security, going insolvent in 2034? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. But if it is, we're going to get a decrease in our paycheck from Social Security at 20%. So you must become accountable sooner than later about managing your own money, because you're going to live longer. There's no doubt about it. That's what the statistics say. And you must plan as early as you can. So you're 20, 30 years from retirement. I mean, they're talking you must save 10 to 15% of your income. So the sooner you start, the better off you're going to be. And the second thing is this. This is critical. When you finally get to that retirement age, the safe withdrawal rate, the amount of money that you could take out of your nest egg per year without the fear of running out of money, it's been about 4%. Okay. That number is now dropped by Dr. Wade just recently to 2.4. That's why I want Americans to know, using a two asset class model, will it sustain you 5, 10, 20, 30, 40 years? Will it give you the income of 4 to 5% withdrawal rates? In my opinion right now, absolutely not. That's why you must become financially literate. You must know what your options are and find a qualified advisor that can give you more options than just a two asset class model, number one. Number two, figure out how much you need to save as a percentage of your income to get there. Because I think retirement today is redefined. I think people want to retire, but everyone wants to stay active. So I see a lot of my clients continuing to work and stay active in the community, because people just don't want to go home and sit there and watch TV and be retired. So there's a lot of actionable steps that must be done by the advisor, the qualified professional who's monitoring your goals, and who's making sure you're getting that expected rate of return and making sure that you're saving enough, because you don't want to go to retirement blindly. And if you ask 10 people, well, how much do you need to retire? I don't think a majority of those people are going to give you a number that they need to be at or how much of a percentage of their income they need to save to get there. And that's a huge problem in America today with the retirement crisis, in my opinion.
Understood. In closing, why is it, let's to backtrack on something you said early in our conversation, that the financial industry doesn't really care about an educated consumer? It's so surprising in a sense. I understand why some industries might not want to. They want to keep the keys to the kingdom. But
mm-hmm.
a certain understanding really encourages people to really be more active in a particular area rather than making such foolish decisions. Somebody who's got all their money in gold, or somebody who's got it under the bed, yep. or somebody who's got it yep. in the bank earning 0.1%. Why would the financial industry, for not even imagining the good players and the bad, but just all the players, why yep. would they not yep. want people to open up their thinking and know more so that they can engage in a conversation with someone who might lead them to their products?
I think it comes down to, you know, it's really easy to put someone in the 60-40 model and charge you 1%. I mean, really, you come to me and say, okay, you're a moderate investor, I'm going to put you with this manager. I mean, it's easy money, in my opinion. I see it as easy money for the financial service industry, and that they're going to have to take a lot more time educating. And time is what? Time is money. So, you know, and I'm in the industry. I'm going against the grain, okay? I mean, I'm probably going to have a lot of haters with my book who are financial planners, because it does take a commitment of time. People need to be empowered to make good decisions about their financial affairs, but they also need to be educated. And they don't need to be sold something that advisors are not talking about today that 60-40 may, based on my research, not be a strategy that can sustain you in your retirement. Why aren't people giving consumers the truth? And I feel it's my responsibility as a planner in this field to be able to come forth and be truthful, give people the facts, and let them empower themselves to make good decisions with people who care about their retirement.
Cindy, I can't thank you enough. I love talking about this topic, and I've always studied it enough just to be a little bit dangerous in pursuing my own investment strategies. But I want to spell out your name, because somebody may be looking for the book as a result of listening to our discussion today. It's Cindy Koumyoungjian. And let me spell that for you. Koumyoungjian. So I think it's really important that you have that spelled out. Again, Koumyoungjian. And again, Koumyoungjian. And the book is called Redefining Financial Literacy, Unlocking the Hidden Forces of Your Financial Future. I wish you the best of luck with the book, and we'll have you back when your new book is ready to come out, and stay in touch with us. And I thank you so much, Cindy. And again, any last piece of advice that you'd like to give someone listening?
Get empowered, get educated, and take a little bit of time, and potentially you'll get where you want to go.
All right, but no guarantees.
With no guarantees, of course. Potentially.
And there's
potentially
no feedback guarantee, having listened to the podcast, you need to make better decisions. But I hope this will help in that process. Thanks for being with us today on America Trends.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Larry.